In 2026, 3CR is celebrating 50 years on air.
Coming up is a podcast brought to you by the dedicated and diverse volunteers at 3CR. Just a quick message before you get there. For the month of June, we're asking listeners to donate to the station to help keep us going. We rely on the generous donations of the community to survive. Go to 3cr.org.au/donate and show your support for community-owned and community-run media. Thanks for your support and happy listening.
Slavery is back.
Welcome to a place where private business profit from a captive labour force, yet pennies are spent on medical services to a population in which the Indigenous, the poor and the mentally ill are overrepresented. Where isolation, humiliation and degradation are facts of life. Welcome to prison.
It depends who's telling the story, I suppose. The prisoners would have one view, the people who work in the prison system would have another, and I think it's up to people to decide where the truth is.
Give government propaganda and the media spin doctors the flick. And check out Doin' Time for news, views and tunes on prison issues from Guantanamo Bay to Christmas Island to prisons and detention centres everywhere. Every Monday at 4pm on your community radio 3CR.
We are still fired up and we're still talking about revolution.
Hello and welcome to the Doin' Time Show. This is 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on the dial, streaming live on www.3cr.org.au. This is Marissa and I'll be taking you through for an hour. And a warning that this week's episode of Doin' Time contains audio descriptions of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who have died, graphic discussion of deaths in custody, and the name and audio image of a First Nations person who has passed away. Last week was Radiothon at 3CR with the special theme of 50 years. 3CR is celebrating 50 years and throughout the month of June and beyond we will be doing special programming of archival material since 1976. It's not too late to donate. Donations from listeners are the best way to keep 3CR operating as a genuinely independent and non-commercial broadcast service. A strong result in 2026 means we will be able to stay on air and sets us up to well for a sustainable future. The target for Doin' Time is $1,000 and we've got $170 left. So we're not quite there yet. So I'm really hoping that listeners can donate just a little bit more. Try to donate before the 30th of June because from $2 onwards, it's a tax-deductible donation. So, yeah, pick up the phone, call 9419 8377 or donate online or drop into the station, 21 Smith Street, Fitzroy. We're celebrating an incredible milestone. 50 years on air is an amazing achievement. Let's ensure the station is thriving for the next 50 years. First up on the show, well, that's if the world's still here after 50 years. Well, there's climate change, but he's hoping. First up on the show, I'm going to be broadcasting an archival interview of a First Nations warrior, and I'm going to issue another content warning. You are about to hear the voice of a First Nations person who has died. Last week, during the Radiothon show, Doin' Time played a short segment of an interview with Ray Jackson from the 1990s. We then interviewed Carolyn Jackson, his daughter, as part of the special programming for Radiothon. Pretty soon, I'll be playing the interview in full to honour Ray and his family and to also showcase material from the archives. Listen to 3CR as a whole, as there will be lots of other excellent archival pieces. As I said last week, we found Ray Jackson's interview quite by accident, and it's made a lot of people really happy to listen to him. We had to copy it from an old reel and digitise it on computer. The description on the outside of the reel reads as follows. Aboriginal Deaths in Custody, description, Ray Jackson from Deaths in Custody Watch Committee, Sydney, talks on the latest two deaths in custody in 1996. And the captions also read Royal Commission and Prisons. The presenter at the time was Sasha Chargaret. I hope I pronounced that properly. Before I play the interview, I'll just speak in a little bit more detail. Ray Jackson, born the 27th of March 1941 and died on April 23rd, 2015. He was a Wiradjuri warrior who dedicated his life to fighting for justice and human rights for Aboriginal people and much more. A former trade unionist, Ray became the founding secretary of the Aboriginal Deaths in Custody Watch Committee in 1987 and later the president of the Indigenous Social Justice Association, Sydney, which he founded. And I also wanted to say as well that we received a donation from Cheryl and Claus, who are from Istra in Melbourne. Thank you very much, Cheryl and Claus, for that donation. It means a lot. And after the interview, we'll bring you an extended interview with Violet Coco, flotilla activist and climate defender. And, yeah, so she'll be speaking about her experiences on the flotilla. Violet actually spoke to us last week and donated $25 for the Do and Time show. So donate to shows, all shows at 3CR and to the Do and Time show. And while you're listening to this beautiful piece from the archives, do see if you can donate. We only have $170 left. So, yep, we will be playing this interview right now.
Now, I believe there's been a second Aboriginal man die in custody this year, yesterday in June. How does the Watch Committee see what's going on in Australia's prisons?
Well, this is the debate we've been having with TICNA over the first week of this year, is that there needs to be a national meeting of corrective service ministers, ourselves, Aboriginal legal service reps, and representatives from the office of Mick Dodson. Last year in New South Wales, there were seven deaths. That was the highest recorded amount of Aboriginal deaths in custody in this state since 1980. Now, we do not want a repeat of 1995, and yet here we are at week two, already up to two deaths nationally, our first for New South Wales. We've set up a meeting with Bob Debus for Thursday. He's the Corrective Services Minister. And we hope that that will be the first of a series of meetings with him and other custodial people to better implement the Royal Commission recommendations into the prison system. That has to be done. Ideally, we would like it to be done at a national level. We believe national level would be a better way to deal with the matter, but there doesn't seem to be too much enthusiasm for that. So until we can ferment some excitement in that area, we're going along with the state meeting.
Right, I see. Now, do you hold much hope for much change through these meetings?
Well, there has to be. If there isn't any change and Aboriginal deaths in custody just keep increasing year after year after year, that shows either that the 339 recommendations are all wrong or there is no willingness on behalf of the people who run the prison systems to do something with them, or both. The way we see it at this point in time, it is the latter rather than the former. There is not a real willingness on behalf of custodial people and corrections health services to implement and utilise the recommendations on a daily basis. If that was done, the deaths would, we believe, decrease. In every coroner's report that there has been, there has always been examples made where custodial staff or corrections health service staff have breached in their duty of care. Yet nothing is ever done with those people. We believe that when somebody is taken to task for a flagrant breach of duty of care, then and only then will the people realise that these recommendations really mean something. They are, in fact, a part of their daily job, and they better understand them and utilise them a hell of a lot better than what they're doing now.
Right. Well, now, as you were saying, 339 recommendations and I believe $400 million supposedly by Mr. Tickner to put them in place. Do you think the Royal Commission was a waste of time given continuing deaths in custody?
Yes and no. It was a waste of time in that a lot of it was a cover-up. No person was ever found guilty of any misdemeanor whatsoever for any death. Now, quite blatantly, there were cases where it was quite obvious that our people did not die at their own hands. One only has to think of John Pat, a 16-year-old Western Australian Aboriginal man who was kicked to death by six cops. Those six cops still work within the Western Australian cop system, and we see that as being totally wrong. Edward Murray, who the coroner found did not die by his own hand, but in fact died at the hand of persons unknown. Now, he was in a wee war cop shop. The only other people in that jail in that cop shop at that time were the cops themselves. Like, I mean, there's a lot that defies the intelligence of people. Further, there's been more examples of failure of duty of care, as I mentioned earlier, which highlight the fact that people, for whatever reason, are not doing their job properly. Now, if you do not do your job properly, then things happen. In the case of running prisons, deaths happen. And until the people understand the recommendations better and utilise them better and utilise them on a daily basis as part of their normal work routines, then we believe there's not going to be any change. And this is the meetings that we want at state and federal levels, to push these points, to have them looked at, to have them accepted, and to do something with it.
Yes. Now, Charles Perkins has said that the lot of Aborigines was in many ways better 30 years ago. Would you agree with that statement?
In one sense, yes. 30 years ago is roughly when the referendum came in 1967, and our people were handed over, responsibility for our people was handed over to the federal government. Well, unfortunately, since that time, all federal governments have not done what we see as their duty of care to our people. And Robert Tickner is only the latest example of that lack of will from federal governments to intervene on matters Aboriginal. This was handed to them under the 1967 referendum, when Aboriginal people in this country were first recognised as human beings and could vote at federal elections. Before that, we weren't even counted for census or anything else. Part of that referendum gave the federal government the power to intervene in the states and the territories on Aboriginal matters. They've never done it. I think Whitlam done it with the land claim by the Gurindji people up on Waveville Station and that. But it's never been used since. We still believe that Tickner has the power to do something. Tickner says he hasn't, and that we should either go to Duncan Kerr the Justice Minister, the Federal Justice Minister, or in fact we should go to the United Nations. Well, that we see is an insult, not only to us but to our intelligence as well. Why should we go to the United Nations? The struggle is here in this country, not over in the United Nations. And he, Tickner, is the Minister for Aboriginal Affairs at the federal level. It's no use him saying he can't do anything. But we're not going to bother with Robert anymore. He doesn't want to put his head up. That's fine. We'll go to Duncan Kerr and we'll go to the state.
Yes, sir. It has been amazing how the buck's been passed from one government to another.
And we're sick of it.
Yeah, understandably so. Lastly, Ray, what's your view on the sort of media coverage on deaths in custody? I know there's been a lot of... it's been quite quiet in the papers, given the fact that 60 people have died since the end of the Royal Commission.
87.
87, is it?
88 now.
Really?
88 it is now. Media coverage reflects the public interest in things. The public really doesn't have any interest in Aboriginal deaths in custody. They don't even worry about their own people in jail. When is the last time that you or your listeners have ever read in a paper about the death of a non-Aboriginal person in prison? It doesn't even make the news.
That's right.
Because those people, once they're behind the wall, whether you're black, white or brindle, it really doesn't matter. You become a non-person. You don't exist. You aren't there. So when you die, you're not there either. It's only the families that feel. But in our situation, whole communities feel. It's not just restricted to families. It involves the whole total community which grieves for the people. There's just too much apathy. And that apathy could be overcome by a better media who could educate the general populace out there on what prisons are like. They are the most unnatural places on earth. And there is no such thing as a good prison or an easy prison. Even if it's a prison farm, it's still a prison. And people wouldn't believe what goes on in jail. They just wouldn't believe it. They don't want to believe it. They're obviously criminals. They're obviously all rapists, murderers, thieves, rock spiders, whatever. And they are not deserving of any sympathy. They are not deserving of any recognition that they are still human beings. And a lot of the people in there are worthy of being recognised as human beings, if not all of them.
That's right, and it's amazing how the sort of popular stereotype works of prisons being like holiday camps.
Yeah, I'm sick of that, where people see a prison with a tennis court there, or maybe even the odd swimming pool. What they don't seem to realise, in a lot of occasions, those tennis courts, those swimming pools, even a golf course which has been built out at Windsor, they are not for the use of the inmates. They are for the use of the officers.
Mm.
They're not for the prisoners. The prisoners are in their little cells. They don't get out on a golf course. They don't get out in the swimming pool. There's not too much tennis for them. It's not a holiday camp. It certainly isn't. Anybody who's done time will tell you what it's like. It's the daily fear of getting raped. It's the daily fear of getting bashed. It's the daily fear of getting set up by custodial officers with a sick mind who get their rocks off by playing mind games with people. Now, jail's not easy. Never has been, never will be.
Well, Ray, thanks very much for speaking to us today, and all the best with your work.
Good on you. Thanks.
Thanks, mate.
Thank you.
And that was an archival interview with Ray Jackson, Uncle Ray Jackson, who is a First Nations warrior and did a lot of work, extensive work, with Aboriginal deaths in custody, building the movement to stop Aboriginal deaths in custody. And I just can't believe that he has gone, that he's passed away. But, yeah, listening to that interview, I haven't had a chance to listen to that in full, but it's actually brought back a lot of wonderful memories about Ray and his work. And what really stands out for me is when he says black, white or brindle, we've all got to unite. But, yeah, we're going to be going through to a few announcements and then we'll bring you an interview with Violet Flotilla, activist and climate defender. But first, we'll go to some announcements.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
Only 3CR takes things that the other radio stations wouldn't even take a sniff at.
In early 1980, Dollebrand visited Australia, and whilst he was here, he played a special benefit for 3CR in recognition of the station's role in fighting racism in South Africa.
So I think our role as broadcasters was quite phenomenal in making those connections with people out there who probably had no other connections with other gay and lesbian people.
The station is unashamedly left-wing, and many of its programs stick in the throat of political conservatives.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
To donate, call 03 9419 8377 or donate online at 3cr.org.au.
The new International Bookshop's Big Red Book Fair is back for 2026. We'll have thousands of second-hand books for super low prices and 20% off new books, plus many other cool things. This is a great moment to support Melbourne's longest-running left bookshop. I'll see you on Saturday, the 18th of July, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Trades Hall, 54 Victoria Street, Carlton. Can't wait to see you there. The new International Bookshop is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to the Do and Time Show, 3CR Community Radio, and this is Marissa taking you through until 5 o'clock this evening. And next up on the show, we're going to be interviewing and talking to Violet Coco. Violet was with us last week during our special radiothon show, and she donated $25, and I'm really thank you so much for that. And we're going to be speaking with her shortly. So, Violet, along with Ethan Floyd and quite a few other Flotilla activists were intercepted at gunpoint in international waters as they're on their way to Gaza while trying to deliver life-saving aid to starving civilians in Gaza. And so there are tens of thousands of Palestinians subjected to systematic abuse and torture remain in these detention facilities. And I wanted to speak with Violet about all this and have a longer interview with her because I really enjoyed her company last week. And I want to also speak to her about some of the actions that she has done in terms of defending forests and whether she's had any prison experiences. Hello, Violet. Welcome.
Hello. Thanks for having me back.
It's so lovely to have you and thank you for taking the time.
Oh, it's so important to share about these experiences and yeah, we'll talk about what's going on in the world. Such
absolutely
a prominent time.
Yeah, now, Violet, a lot of the time we forget about self-care, don't we? And we also need to understand that a lot of people, the people that went on the flotilla, went through trauma. Can you talk about what happened to you on the flotilla?
Yeah, before I jump into that, I just want to acknowledge that, you know, what I'm about to talk about involves assault and sexual assault and violence. And so if any of your listeners have experience with those things, just to, I guess, take care of yourselves, to to be prepared that that's coming, and reach out to your networks and resources if you feel overwhelmed or if it triggers something, because it was quite horrific. As you said, we were on the flotilla. We were 170 nautical miles from Gaza in international waters. We were sailing with food, medication, children's books, prosthetics, and, mostly we were sailing to break Israel's illegal siege on the Palestinian people, because not only have they been committing a genocide there, but also for, the better part of a decade, they have not allowed aid and free travel, freedom of movement for the Palestinians in and out of their own country. And so so we were sailing to draw attention to that, and sure enough, Israeli military met us in international waters. The first interception of the fleet was all the way out near Greece, completely well away from their claimed zones. But we were a bit closer in, and then, military people boarded our vessel. They removed all of our clothes from us. They searched us. They drove our boat to a prison ship. They loaded us onto this prison ship and immediately started a lot of violence against us. They had us kneeling on the ground. We weren't allowed to look up. They cut all of our clothes from us except the most bottom layer. They then gave us all a number and one by one put us into a shipping container. When it was my turn to be put into the shipping container, I remember seeing five men in there as they closed the door behind me in the dark. And these men were twice my size. They beat me several times over the head. I fell into the side of the shipping container. They started kicking me, and then they started groping at my body in my privates. And then, once they sort of had finished whatever they had been, instructed to do to us, they threw me out into the deck of a ship, which had been cordoned off with shipping containers. Six shipping containers in the space of a rectangle. We had access to three of these shipping containers, which were our prison for the next 2 days. Throughout that two-day struggle, they used sleep deprivation, humiliation, flashbangs, continued violence, deprivation from, we had very little water, not enough water for everybody to go around, and just a bag of white bread. People needed medication, women needed pads, complete. People were saying they're treating us like animals, and as a vegan, I was like, yeah, it's not nice. But, we realized that, we're going to get it close to shore. They came in, they zip-tied all of our hands, they got us to line up in number order. They zip-tied all our hands and had us in that stress position, which many people have seen in these videos, which is basically you're on your knees and you have to put your forehead on the ground. It's a very painful position, especially for many of my comrades who had broken ribs and many other injuries. And they held us in that position in the sun, so heat stress, while they played the Israeli national anthem. One person counted 72 times. They then moved us into another tent, and we were in that tent in the stress position for another few hours. I was in so much pain. I was crying and just begging for it to be over. I passed out a few times. They then moved us into an airport, and it was then moved from military custody into police custody. The police officer would get me to be in the stress position, and then she would balance my passport on my back. And she said, if it falls, I will kick you. And after seeing how many injuries my comrades had sustained from their kickings, I did not want that to happen. So I was very terrified as they moved me from desk to desk. And in between each desk, I had to balance this passport on my back in the stress position. From there, they moved us to Ashdot Prison, which was another night of torture, of sleep deprivation and no food and no water for 2 days. And in that prison, you know, we experienced the writing on the walls from the Palestinian people, those 10,000 Palestinians which are still in these prison systems. And, you know, 300 of those are children, some as young as two. And, you know, we saw the dogs there. They have German shepherds in these prisons, which they've trained to rape the Palestinian people who are in the prisons with them and supposed to be in their care. One thing that just shocked me throughout this whole experience was how much the Israeli people enjoyed this cruelty that they were implementing upon us all. They clearly felt they had a right, and it was clearly not a stranger to them to enact in these ways. And so, you know, I just, when I think about what I went through, it was so horrific. And, you know, I've obviously been spending a lot of time healing from that trauma, and so have my comrades. Some of them are permanently damaged with brain damage and all kinds of horrible things. So I consider myself lucky that I'm not more hurt. And I know that, you know, what got me through was thinking about my loved ones, my husband and all the people who care about me at home and feeling their strength with me and knowing that they're safe and knowing that I have a home to come back to. And I think about all the Palestinian prisoners who are in those prisons, in those awful situations, in these torturous situations, being assaulted, and they don't have that same guarantee. They don't know if they have a home to go back to. They don't know what if their family is alive and safe. And so, you know, I just pray for everybody listening to understand that the Palestinian prisoners, you know, that is a front line that is so important for us to advocate for. We have to have these people released from this absolutely torturous situation.
Well, I am very honoured that you were able to speak about this on this show, and I'm not surprised to hear all this. I'm not shocked.
Yeah.
But obviously we will issue another content warning that if people have been triggered by this, reach out to your resources, network resources. Violet, I mean, as you were speaking, I was listening very carefully, and I wanted to ask you, have other media outlets allowed you to speak so freely about this?
I mean, I've pretty much only done friendly media. We have refused to talk to right-wing media for the very reason that you're alluding to, that, obviously they... One of our people did a media interview with ABC, and they did really put the burden of proof on her, and I think that was very unfair. They were really treating her like she was under investigation for these claims. And
who was that? Sorry,
that was ABC, which was very shocking.
The 7:30 report. Yes.
The 7:30 report. Yeah, that's right. And it was very shocking because, you know, when we were ejected from Israeli prison, all we had is the clothes on us. We couldn't take any photos. We couldn't get any DNA of our aggressors. All we have is our stories and the bruises on our bodies. And, you know, when we did get to Turkey, who agreed to accept us from Israel, they, you know, have the hospital records of all of the broken bones and all the people who spent days and days in hospital afterwards. But, you know, we came home. Like we didn't grab everybody's records before we came home. We had nothing but the prison outfits on our back, and we just wanted to be home with our loved ones. And so the burden of proof to be on people who suffered so much and then, you know, have to basically escape this terrorist nation.
Disgusting.
State was very horrific.
Yeah, I actually found that quite shocking that you know, on the ABC report that the young woman was being interrogated almost about, why haven't you got the records? Why haven't you got the records?
Yeah. And Neve did a fantastic job of holding her own on there, but it was definitely a wake-up call to all of us to not rest on our laurels on who we choose to speak to.
Although, at least, you know, it did receive media attention, and there was a lot of exposure.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, we obviously, the teams worked really hard to get some accountability from Penny Wong. Senator Faruqi is just my absolute hero at the moment. The way that she cornered Wong into saying that she believed us was very powerful. You know, she said, "Do you believe survivors? Do you believe women?" And so Wong really had to concede that. Otherwise, she would be taking a big back step in her own professions of being standing with women. And so, having a few of us meet with Wong, and now we're having an official investigation through the AFP about the assault from Israel. And again, you know, it's difficult for us to be like, Israel hurt us. When we were only in their custody for 4 days, and all of us can see that, you know, Israel has been committing a genocide against the Palestinian people. They're bombing Lebanon, they're bombing Iran, and we want justice for these absolutely horrific things. But it's very hard to hold this government to account, get them to seek justice for these things that are happening not on our soil. And so, because they've done this to citizens of Australia, it gives us a legal leg to stand on to get them to seek some accountability. So I know our whole team, you know, they would much rather see justice for Palestinians than themselves. You know, it definitely is some leverage to have this government acknowledge Israel's crimes and drive a wedge there for some more accountability.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that I've been thinking about, and this is an injury to one is an injury to all, because it isn't just, I mean, yes, it's Palestinians, it's terribly important, but at the same time, it could be, we could all be next.
Well, that's it. I mean, if this government won't stand up for the citizens of its country getting assaulted and kidnapped by another nation state, whom the Prime Minister of this country has said publicly, we are a friend of Israel. And so to have one of our so-called friends abduct citizens and beat them, torture them and sexually assault them, you know, there has to be some kind of recourse for that. There has to be some kind of, accountability. And so, yeah, hopefully that will happen.
Precisely. And, I mean, I think what stands out, I think, with 3CR is the fact that we allow people to tell their stories, and we encourage people to tell their stories, and we expose the genocide of what's happening in Gaza, and we're not afraid to do it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, 3CR is one of the most important things in our community here in NAM. You know, the platform that it gives to people who need to be heard and need their story out there is just so, so important and so powerful, not just, you know, Palestinian people, but also refugees and First Nations and homeless people and people in prison. I mean, every time I'm cold for your show. I hear little snippets of people talking about prison, and it takes me straight back there. And, it's very, very important that that's heard and that we sort of break down the veil of these places.
How are you going, Violet? Do you want to end it now, or can you stay on for a little bit longer? Because I'm conscious that, you know, you may not wish to talk more.
I can stay on. I mean, I really feel lovely and safe with you, so happy to keep chatting.
Well, safety is very important on this show, and actually, I don't know if you heard the last bit snippet of Ray Jackson, Uncle Ray Jackson, who passed away. He was talking about Aboriginal deaths in custody just before I spoke to you.
Mm. Yeah, I did hear that. Very powerful.
Yeah. So I was going to say, I met you at the March for Forests, and then I saw this excellent article in Sydney Criminal Lawyers, and it talked about how you spent 8 months in prison for defending, was it Forests?
It was just two months.
2 months.
It was for climate. Yeah, no, that's okay. These stories they get bigger and bigger every time I hear.
They're very good though. Yeah, go on.
No. So basically, it was an accumulation of my work between defending the forest and climate work and already Palestine and peace work. Every time I do an action that involves an arrest, it kind of moves you up the criminal ladder. And in the end, it was a climate action, but I did get sentenced to 2 months at Dame Phyllis Frost here in Victoria. Which, you know, was a very powerful experience. I'm still connected with a lot of the women in there, and, you know, the way that our prison systems are run is just horrific. The lack of care, the fear, the constant lockdowns, the access to medication. Every chance I get to advocate for them, I feel compelled to. So thank you so much for this show, particularly because I think it's so important that those people have a voice.
Absolutely, and a shout out to everybody who is inside, our brothers and sisters inside, and also a shout out goes out to Ethan Floyd and all the other flotilla activists, also Gemma. I think she might have been on Monday Breakfast last week. And because, I mean, when I interviewed Ethan a couple of weeks ago, his story was very similar. I mean, I think he might even have some injury as well around the head, he was saying.
Yeah.
But so lovely. I mean, he'd come down from Canberra and he was in Melbourne, and he happened to be in Melbourne on the day that I was airing the show, and he came into the studio and... it's horrific. It's horrific for what happened. It's absolutely disgraceful and deplorable and violation of human rights for the people of Gaza.
Yeah, I hear your passion and I see it and double it. It's there has to be an end to the crimes of Israel. We really, as a the people of conscience of this world. And this is why I joined the flotilla. I knew the risk. I knew that I could be hurt, and I could. I knew that, you know, people have died on the flotilla before, and I thought, you know, living through this time, we have such a responsibility to share the load of violence. There are people who are suffering at the hands of these absolute criminals, and part of our tax dollars is going to them. Part of our, you know, every time we buy things that support Israel, like Coca-Cola or Starbucks or anything like that, you know, that's funding this genocide. And so we really have a responsibility to know where our money is going, and also to stop the weapons that are being produced on this shore. And, you know, we produce essential parts to the S-35, which is a fighter jet that's done a lot of carpet bombing in Palestine. And also we have Pine Gap in the center of this continent, which is a military facility that's mostly run by America. And they provide essential information for drone attacks in the whole Swa'ana region. So it's possible that, you know, the information for that bombing in Iran, for example, of the school, it's potential that the information for that bombing came through this continent and through that facility. And so we have a massive contingent of people heading to Pine Gap. Some are leaving next Saturday and some are leaving in a couple of weeks' time. And we're actually going to do a massive convoy all the way to the center of this continent and hold a protest outside Pine Gap and call for the closure of Pine Gap. Now, you know, when Penny Wong was asked about Pine Gap, she looked terrified. She said, "We don't talk about that facility." She wouldn't even mention it. It is such a touchy subject, and is because it is such an important piece of infrastructure for the military-industrial complex, and the death that complex brings on. And so, yeah, we want to close that down. Today I was actually in court because I was arrested on Friday, unfortunately, for under suspicion of something that happened many months ago. And they just happened to put me on bail conditions that prevent me from leaving the state. And so I was in court today to make an application to vary my bail. That bail application will be going in on Thursday. So I'll be in front of the courts on Thursday, Magistrates Court, if anyone wants to come and support.
Okay, tell us where it is and what time.
Yeah, the Melbourne Magistrates Court in the morning on Thursday. I think doors open at 9, possibly court start at 10. We will be there to try and vary my bail to allow me to leave the state. While I was in the courts this morning, I heard the police officer saying, we're going to oppose the bail variation because there's a protest in Alice Springs. They've purposefully put these bail conditions on under contesting me being able to leave the state because they want to stop me from protesting at Pine Gap. This is what the police resources are going into right now. And it's absolutely atrocious. You know, femicide is up, gender-based violence is up, and the police are trying to stop peace protesters from stopping a genocide. That's what they're busy doing. So shame on Vic Pol, and
shame.
We'll be fighting those in court on Thursday, and hopefully I'll be leaving to head to Pine Gap over the weekend.
Well, I hope you are. And just a quick question, so if you can answer it, is that those charges, were they for protesting as well?
Yes.
Or something different?
So allegedly after the US bombed the school in Iran, some people went to the US consulate and poured some fake blood on their doorstep. And I'm being associated with that.
Allegedly?
Allegedly.
That's what you're being charged with. Doesn't mean you did it.
That's right.
I mean, seriously? Why would cops want to waste resources on that? See, this is why I get angry. This is why I do the show. Because basically this whole year or two, a lot of the shows that I've been doing have been about the extraordinary police powers that are being put through. And not only that, I mean, people's rights are being violated now.
Mm. Absolutely. I mean, they're calling it strategic incapacitation. That's what the police acknowledge and train about. And it is to strategically incapacitate. It's to stop activists from doing activism. It's to stop protests from happening. And they do that through these bail conditions in particular. So basically they will arrest activists over trumped-up charges, have very, very little evidence
Well, if any, they raid houses, they bash down doors, they terrify people's housemates, and they harass activists, and then they put them on these bail conditions and then set the court date. My court date's not till December. You know, the courts are not busy right now, and I'm in December. Why? Because they want me on bail, and they want me on bail because I'm easier to control on bail. And so, so they're basically doing this to stop our democratic rights, and it is shameful, and we do need to have some accountability about it. We need to be asking, well, what magistrate signed the warrant for my house to be raided? For they've still got my phone, they've got my laptop, they woke my husband up at 7 o'clock in the morning and trashed my house, absolutely trashed my house. I wasn't here, I was on the flotilla at the time. They raided my house, yeah. And so they've used, you know, all of these police resources, and not just my house, four other women's houses. Some of them have kids. Some of them have refugees in their houses, all these things. And you know, they're terrifying people, stealing our stuff, trashing our house, breaking down doors. They broke my fence, you know, and we just have to cop this to be able to speak about, you know, up against genocide.
This is savage, and you know, obviously there's the government and the police are feeling threatened. The apparatus state is feeling threatened.
Absolutely, yeah. They want us quiet and they want us compliant, but they don't realise that every time they do things like this, all they do is make us louder, make us angrier, make us more determined to seek justice.
Violet, thank you so much for coming onto the program. I think this is very, very essential listening. And I'm hoping that we've had new listeners coming in that don't know anything about it, because, you know, we've got the One Nation Party now on the rise. But that's for another show, I think. But we have to be very careful now.
Don't get me started. Don't get me started.
Oh, Violet, what's going to happen? What is going to happen? We have to stay positive, isn't it?
Well, we have to care for ourselves. I mean, staying positive is one thing. I think, obviously, there's a duality there where, you know, we need to honour our emotions, honour our grief for the world, honour our anger, honour the injustice. You know, we can't be constantly positive, because it's not a positive world, and that would be to deny our true nature and true reality. But we do need to have resilience. Now is the time for community to stick together. We cannot achieve justice without the people uniting and working together, and caring for each other. You know, mutual aid has never been more important, and community resilience has never been more important, as we see the rise of fascism and people trying to create division and violence, trying to have us fight culture wars so we're not fighting a class war. But we have to remember who the real enemies are. They're the billionaires who are destroying this planet, and they're also sowing all of this division in our community. And so, yeah, I just call everybody to take care of yourself, take care of your community, keep an eye on each other in these times, and don't lose hope and faith that good people are out there doing good things, and find those people and work together.
Absolutely, Violet. Thank you very much. And also a concluding comment that if, you know, these things cannot remain hidden. If the police are raiding your houses, come into the show and talk about it and be loud about it. Thanks a lot, Violet.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Tune in to the Beyond the Bars Prison Broadcast during NAIDOC Week 2026. Listen to 3CR each weekday at 11 a.m. from Monday the 6th through to Friday the 10th of July. We'll take you inside six Victorian prisons: Dame Phyllis Frost Centre, Barwon Prison, Fulham Correctional Centre, Loddon Prison, Marganite Correctional Centre and Western Plains Correctional Centre. There'll be stories, songs, opinions and poems from the men and women inside while connecting with culture and community. The shows will be live on 3CR 855 on your AM dial, 3CR Digital and streaming via our website or the Community Radio Plus app. Head to 3cr.org.au/beyondthebars2026 for more information.
This country's black future is a fire.
And you're listening to 3CR Community Radio. It's goodbye from Marissa. And a special thank you to Violet Coco for coming onto the show. Thank you so much. And stay tuned every Monday, 4 to 5, for the Do and Time Show. The people united shall never be defeated. Bye.
As long as you a true fella, as long as you a real fella. All the people of different races with different lives in different places, it doesn't matter what your name is. We got to have lots of changes. We need more brothers if we're to make it. We need more sisters if we're to save it. Are you the one who's gonna stay?
CR celebrating 50 years.
Did you enjoy listening to that podcast? 3CR is a community radio station, and you, the listener, are a part of that community. Right now, it's our radiothon. We need you to pitch in with a few dollars to keep the station going. We can't do it without you. It's easy. Head to 3cr.org.au/donate. Your donations really matter.